Okay, so our first plenary speaker is Dr. Deb Hori, and she is the director of the National Center for Injury Prevention and Control at CDC. In this role, Dr. Hori leads innovative research and science-based programs to prevent injuries and violence and to reduce their consequences. She joined the CDC in October of 2014, and she has previously served as vice chair and associate professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at Emory University School of Medicine, and as an associate professor in the Departments of Behavioral Science and Health Education and in Environmental Health at the Rollins School of Public Health. Dr. Hori also served as an attending physician at Emory University Hospital and Grady Memorial Hospital, and as the director of the Emory Center for Injury Control. Her prior research has focused on injury and violence prevention in addition to the interface between emergency medicine and public health. She has authored more than 90 peer-reviewed publications and book chapters on injury prevention and violence, and Dr. Hori received her MD and MPH degrees from Tulane University and completed her residency training in emergency medicine at Denver Health Medical Center. So, Dr. Hori.
Good morning, and I've got my water with me since after traveling all yesterday. Have a little bit of airplane cred. For those of you standing in the back, I would encourage you to grab some seats. Caleb and I will be speaking, and then we hope to have time for Q&A and discussion, so it's easier if you're sitting than if you're standing for an hour, but it's up to you. So today I'm really excited to talk with you about the opioid overdose epidemic and how we can really work together to have more timely, comprehensive, and actionable data to really drive action. So, first, I must confess I am not an epidemiologist. I don't pretend to be one either. You can ask my staff. I rely on their expertise in this area. I'm an emergency physician, and I've seen the people behind the numbers, and that's why this means so much to me. I do understand and appreciate the value of data to drive action and tell stories. And I think together we can really harness this power and talk about how we can track the epidemic and really look at interventions and focus on prevention efforts. I thought it might be helpful to first talk a bit about the Injury Center at CDC and how we came about doing work on opioids. Maybe. There we go. There we go. Maybe it's a little sensitive. Let's go with the flow. Violence and injuries, when you look at leading causes of death in the first half of life, affect everyone and are the leading cause of death, regardless of age, race, or economic status. And more Americans die from violence and injuries than other causes, such as cancer, HIV, or flu. Try this again. There we go. But I think it's important, we always talk about the tip of the iceberg. You know, when you're looking at numbers, deaths are literally the tip of the iceberg and only part of the problem. Nearly 28 million people seek care in emergency departments each year for an injury. And this doesn't count the people that go to a primary care provider or don't seek care for an injury or violence. And we know many people experience long-term physical injuries or mental health consequences or economic loss from injuries and violence. It resulted in $671 billion in cost to the United States in 2013, with non-fatal injuries accounting for about $457 billion and fatal for about $214 billion. So at CDC, injuries and violence are so many topics. We want to focus on a few where we thought we could have the most impact. And motor vehicles is one of our winnable battles, and opioid overdose is also one of our top priorities at CDC, as well as for Secretary Price. We also want to focus on areas where there's data, as well as scalable actions, and this is why we've also selected suicide and traumatic brain injury, child maltreatment and sexual violence as other areas. Excuse me. So, the opioid overdose epidemic, and really, how did CDC first get involved? So as you can see from this slide, in the early 1990s, we began to start to see a trend of increasing overdoses from drugs. And this started to go up around the late 90s, really in opioids. And we started looking at this, we realized it wasn't just heroin that was driving it, it was prescription drugs that were contributing to this. The Injury Center really relied on epidemiologists from Maine and North Carolina and Washington State, and the medical examiners who started saying, we're seeing this increase in unintentional overdoses, and it's due to prescription opioids. So CDC scientists investigated this and looked at vital statistics data and correlated this with drug sales from DEA and found that overdose deaths were increasing, really in parallel, in lockstep, with prescription opioid sales. And you can just see how those curves really match. It was astounding. When you look at sales of opioid prescriptions in the U.S., they nearly quadrupled. Battery change? They nearly quadrupled from 1999 to 2014, but there has not been an overall change in the amount of pain Americans report. When you actually look at some of the data around U.S. consumption, the U.S. consumed roughly 30% of the world's opioids in 2015, but we know that they only account for about 4.5% of the total world population. And if you look at specific opioids like oxycodone or hydrocodone, we consume over 80% of those in the world. Next slide. There we go. When you look at office-based settings in the U.S., 1 in 5 patients with non-cancer pain is prescribed opioids in office-based settings. And last year around this time, we released the opioid prescribing guideline for chronic pain. When you look at the evidence for many of these conditions, such as arthritis and low back pain, the evidence doesn't support opioids for long-term pain for this. It supports non-opioid and non-pharmacological measures. So this is a striking number, that 1 in 5 in an office setting are getting opioids for non-cancer pain. All right, we'll see how they do this. So this is a map, and what I want you to do is watch from 2000, and we will advance it to 2005. To 10, it's like magic, to 15, and we'll stay on 15 for a minute. We'll go back to 15. So as you can see from the progression, you can really start to see the red spread throughout the United States. And I think when you look at this, it's important to realize, thank you, okay, how quickly this can evolve over the years. For example, states like New Hampshire, one year they were number 20 for overdoses. The following year they became number 5. So these rates can change quickly, and they really don't have boundaries. As you can see, like with West Virginia and Kentucky and Ohio, there's really a blurring in the Appalachian region. Since 2000, more than 300,000 Americans have died of an overdose involving opioids. In 2015 alone, more than 33,000 opioid overdose deaths. Much better. When we look in most recent years at what is causing the increase in the past 2 to 3 years, we're seeing really an uptick in heroin and synthetic opioids such as fentanyl. I think it's important to realize, though, that the rise in fentanyl, heroin, and prescription opioid overdoses are not unrelated. The crisis was caused in a large part by decades of prescribing too many opioids. It was then made worse by wide availability of cheap, potent, and easily available illegal opioids like heroin. And now, with a surge in illicitly manufactured fentanyl, we're in a third wave of the overdose epidemic. I think to put this in perspective for how they're related, we did an outbreak investigation, or EpiAid, in Rhode Island a couple of years ago, and we found that a third of those who had died from a fentanyl overdose had an active or within the past 30 days prescription for an opioid. And a third of those had a high dose, morphine equivalent prescription, something that in our opioid prescribing guideline we say can be associated with addiction or overdose. So again, I think focusing on prevention, really on preventing people from getting addicted in the first place, is crucial. So at CDC, we have three pillars to our work. The first is improving data quality and timeliness and really tracking trends so we can monitor the epidemic, help guide communities with resources, and, you know, look at emerging trends so we can really see what's going on and help with prevention as well as response. The second is strengthening state efforts, and I'll talk a bit about our grant program. And the third is supplying healthcare providers with data, tools, and guidance, such as our opioid prescribing guideline. I'm just going to talk briefly about one and two, really focusing on some of our new surveillance work we're doing at CDC. So state epidemiologists play an essential role in improving understanding of the epidemic in states by collecting, analyzing, and interpreting epidemiologic and surveillance data. Improving the quality and timeliness of data allows us to track trends, identify hotspots, and monitor the epidemic. Such evidence-based insights are crucial for tailoring the use of program resources to have the greatest impact. We truly need timely and comprehensive drug overdose surveillance. I know with most disease entities, we say we need timely and comprehensive data, but when we're looking at things like drug overdose deaths, some states, like I mentioned, New Hampshire, you know, in the period of a year, went from number 20 to number 5. We have to be able to track this in a more timely fashion. We're also seeing, you know, pockets within communities. We did an EpiAid in a different state and found that three communities were largely driving the rates. So being able to focus at the community level to determine what is behind the epidemic, where can we focus our interventions, and being able to say, not that it's a drug overdose, not that just it's an opioid overdose, but what drug is it? For things like carfentanil, which is a very powerful and deadly fentanyl analog, we saw 3,100 deaths in 2013. 2015, this was up to 9,580, so tripling. So we have to be able to monitor where that is so communities know about multi-doses of naloxone. And I've had the privilege of speaking before Congress several times in the past few years, and they, too, are very interested in more timely and complete data. I've spoken about the needs that we have, including, you know, better support for coroners and medical examiners, but we do really need this real-time data so we can intervene at the local level with resources that first responders need to save lives, such as surging supply of naloxone, if we detect these outbreaks. So gaps are opportunities, depending on how you look at it. So there's really no overall national picture of drug overdose deaths. You'll see that we have the numbers. But up to 20% of drug overdose deaths do not have information on the specific drug contributing to the overdose. And this ranges from states, from 1 to 50% of death certificates. So it's very hard to have that complete picture. There's been a lot of progress made, but again, the most recent MMWR said about 20% of drug overdose deaths did not have the specific drug listed. Through our new surveillance program, we hope to address this by really including a lot more medical examiner and coroner reports and death investigation. I know that CSTE is also supporting this through the literal text search on death certificates. We need this death investigation data, too, because when we talk about deaths from, like, fentanyl or morphine, we don't always know if it was illicit or if it was legally prescribed. We need to be able to pull that data again from health reports and things like that so we have a truer, fuller picture. And many state health departments and local health departments are operating on data that's 12 to 23 months old. And I know NCHS has made great strides in really improving the timeliness of the data, but we have to find ways to have quicker data. This is our injury center's response right now to funding states for opioid prevention work. We literally started our program in FY15 with our first appropriation, with a second appropriation in 16. So this is really a budding program that is now funding 44 states, D.C. and Puerto Rico. So it's really been a tremendous undertaking by my staff and those across the agency, as well as the states we partner with. So the blue and green states represent our prevention for state programs, and this is where we're doing things like enhancing prescription drug monitoring programs, so that we can have better data, more real-time data, and being able to share that more with state health departments. Also things like working with health systems and insurers on interventions like implementing prescribing guidelines. The yellow and green states is what I'm going to focus on. This makes up 12 states for our Enhanced State Opioid Overdose Surveillance, or affectionately called ESOS, because we have lots of acronyms at CDC. What's important about this is 8 of the 10 states with the highest drug burden are captured in this data. So I think it's great that for those that are really experiencing the highest overdose deaths, that they are included in the surveillance system. And this does not include all the EpiAid or outbreak investigations we're also doing in states. We've been called more and more frequently to do outbreak investigations with the increase in fentanyl deaths and other associated drug overdose deaths. So our surveillance data. This program has started in FY16 in 12 states. We hope to expand this past those 12 states over the next 1 to 2 years. The goal of this is to leverage systems that are already out there and not to create something new. So we're going to use things like our National Violent Death Reporting System to really enhance the data from like toxicology tests and death scene investigations so that we can really inform prevention efforts around circumstances of death and what could have been prevented. And then use syndromic surveillance data to really have an early warning system. So I hope many of you are familiar with surveillance, syndromic surveillance, and it has been used through CDC and throughout the states around things like infectious disease outbreaks and pandemics, mass gatherings. It's also been used for things like healthcare use, including oral health and medication refills. We can turn these powerful tools now toward the opioid overdose epidemic. And we're starting to do this now at CDC in partnership with many states here. So I hear often, do you all talk to each other across the agency? We do. We could certainly improve how much we talk across our centers at CDC, but we've been working with CSELS and the National Syndromic Surveillance Program to really support local surveillance infrastructure and provide access to the BioSense platform and tools. As I've been learning about this, I thought, well, why don't we just have it up and running? But I've learned it's not that simple, that we have to create syndrome definitions for heroin, opioid, and all drug overdoses, and it's different by state. So we've been providing a lot of technical assistance in getting those definitions. And we've been modifying the essence or the analytic tool to improve functionality for drug overdose monitoring. So what does this look like for addressing the opioid overdose epidemic? Well, state and local health departments can rely on this surveillance to provide timely data on health impacts of the opioid epidemic in their communities. Emergency department and EMS data can be used to identify, characterize, and monitor drug-related visits. And we include text mining of chief complaints because we know that it's difficult to find some of the brand name or street name drugs versus using standardized data. So this gives us a much fuller picture. I also think it's great because we're able to utilize spatial analysis of the data to reveal neighborhood-level trends, again, to see where in the community it's being most impacted. Health departments, in turn, can really use this information to identify outbreaks, target resources, and issue health advisories, particularly to different emergency departments or groups that are seeing these outbreaks. This is the current map of the syndromic surveillance program participation. This is not just for opioids. This is the CDC CSELS platform. Right now, about 2.6 million records are available a day through this system. And about 65% of all emergency departments in the U.S. are available through this data. I was told I was able to give a little sneak preview. And from Public Health Reports, this will be coming out next month. And this is a publication looking at how states and localities, I see people smiling, hopefully they're aware that their stuff would be up here, and how they're using this data. And when you look at New York City, they have 25 different syndromes, and they publish this on a daily basis and compare it to prior years to see, is it going up, is it going down, how are the control efforts working? And they also have neighborhood maps, so they can see which borough, which district is being most impacted. New Hampshire, which was experiencing a traumatic increase in deaths, wanted to look at the overall picture. So they looked at their ED visits and found an 827% increase from 2011 to 2015 in their heroin ED visits. So this really helped show where they needed to help with their prevention efforts. And then Orange County, which had one of the highest heroin mortality rates for Florida, used their syndromic surveillance to identify community clusters of overdoses. So look for this next month. This is just an example of a chief complaint and discharge diagnostic code heroin overdose query. We've been working to create this through Essence so that people can access this when doing the syndromic surveillance. We understand that each site may want to customize the query to fit their data, but we're hoping that this is a good start. Turning it over to the National Violent Death Reporting System, which, in case you're not familiar with it, I'll take a step back. Back in 2003, we funded this through CDC at six states, really because of the lack of integrated and standardized data around violent deaths. We are now up to 40 states, D.C. and Puerto Rico, as of FY16. We'd love to get to 50. We still have a little bit of a ways to go. I think this system is so valuable. We talk about timely data, but this really provides a complete picture. It's not quite as timely because it's pulling from multiple sources, but it pulls from vital statistics, coroner reports, ME, law enforcement. And so for something like a suicide, was there a note beforehand? Was there a precipitating circumstance like school issues or partner violence issues, history of medical problems? All that really helps inform prevention efforts. So we now have a module for unintentional drug overdoses, again with an acronym, SUDORS, State Unintentional Drug Overdose Reporting System. So this will be using the same methodology. We're using it through our surveillance system in the 12 states. To where you'll have drug scene investigations. So you'll be able to see if there's drug paraphernalia to really help distinguish, you know, was this an oral versus an injection? Because a lot of times we can't get that information currently on death certificates. It'll also give information like, were they released from a hospital recently? Had they been treated before for addiction issues or for chronic pain? Again, so when we're looking at how do we prevent this, we're more able to better answer those questions. Our goal is to release data from this about every 8 months. And then finally, I kept waiting for somebody to stand up and touch my shoulder for time. I think there's a lot of opportunities ahead, you know, and we look forward to partnering with CSTE on this. These new systems we've built out through NVDRS and syndromic surveillance, we know aren't perfect, but we hope it's really a nice, robust step to getting more timely and actionable data that really shares the picture of how to prevent opioid overdoses and to prevent people from getting addicted in the first place. Because this is a fast-moving epidemic that claims lives at an alarming rate, it requires nearly instantaneous coordination. And I think CSTE resources such as workgroup and online communication platforms can really be leveraged to speed the dissemination of newly emerging methods, findings, and best practices. I also think that it's a great way when we have a lot of this epi data to make sure that it's getting to our law enforcement professionals, our mental health professionals, and physicians that CSTE really helps disseminate this to all the stakeholders involved in combating this epidemic. And then finally, through our grant program, we're currently working with CSTE to develop a project that really benefits state health departments in all CDC opioid awardee states, particularly those with limited capacity. So it's really going to be a peer-to-peer learning module to where states with high capacity or a lot of experience in this opioid surveillance can then go to a state that is either getting a program up and running or lower capacity to provide in-person training and technical assistance. So with that, I'll turn it over to my co-presenter and then look forward to your questions.